Welcome to Signs of Life, exploring survival of consciousness, brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation on the web at www.foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
I can feel you like an ocean that won't seem to let me go.
Hello and blessings to all. Welcome to Signs of Life, brought to you by Forever Family Foundation with our host, Bob Ginsberg. I'm Fran Ginsberg, and our show tonight is sponsored by Starseed Gems, and they can be found on the web at starseedgems.com. And we gladly send out a shout-out and a thank-you to our new sponsors this year, Learning to Dance in the Rain, Equine Muscle Massage Therapy, Transitions LLC 23, Starseed Gems, Susan Henley, Hugs from Heaven, and Sherry McDowell. Our guest tonight is Alastair Conwell, and if you have a question, comment, or would like to talk to our guest, the toll-free number here is 888-627-6008. So, Bob, are you ready for our Miami event tomorrow?
Yes, I better be. I know we're getting up at 3 in the morning to get there.
Yeah.
You know, I was going over the webinar list, and we just about have every webinar. You know, we have one a month, as you know, so we just have about every slot filled. And one that we just arranged...
You're talking about for 2016,
yeah. And there's a subject that we very rarely discuss in the 10 years of this show, which is UFOs, because... I never thought it was, suitable for, what we study. But the more that I learn, I think it is, and for several reasons. And there's going to be a webinar with Leslie Kane, who wrote a wonderful book, a best-selling book about UFOs, and she'll be doing the webinar. But as I read through the book, I realized that there's a tremendous amount of evidence of unidentified flying objects, not necessarily saying that they're alien life, it's just that they're unidentified. And the eyewitness accounts come from generals, and they come from Air Force pilots, and they come from politicians, and they come from upstanding members, of society, and there's a lot of anecdotal, evidence. And the evidence continuously gets... poo-pooed or put down in a more sinister vein, and it's not unlike our realm, right? I mean, it happens every day in the things that we study. There's all this evidence for all these different phenomena that people just refuse to accept.
Well, it goes back to that same thinking. If I can't take it out to lunch, then it doesn't exist.
Right.
So... those people who haven't had the experience immediately dismiss it as it's somebody else's psychotic experience, or somebody's imagining this, or this triggered it, or that triggered it. It's all the same excuses that the same people are giving to those who experience afterlife encounters.
Right, and it's frustrating on both ends. And there's another reason why I think, we should be interested in it, and I know you agree, is... We're looking at consciousness always. Nobody's figured out exactly what consciousness is, but many people are of the opinion that consciousness is something that's exclusive to this physical sphere that we live on, and consciousness may very well be everywhere throughout the universe. And it never made sense to me that if you believe in intelligent design, that some intelligent designer created billions and billions of stars and galaxies and planets, only to, for what purpose? They have to, if there's an intelligent designer, they have to have a purpose.
Well, they have to have their own life. I always thought that all these other planets, universes, stars have their own life there. The problem with our scientists, you go back to the same thing again. When they send their aircraft there to go collect samples and bring them back and study them, they're studying them according to our accepted laws of what constitutes life. But on that planet, it may be a totally different set of elements that constitutes life for that planet.
Right.
You know, and I always think of the Twilight Zone where the guys land on this planet and they keep saying there's no life here, but you keep hearing this little buzz. And at the end of the Twilight Zone, there are these tiny, itty bitty little people that are living on this planet, and these guys were stepping on them because they didn't want to take a moment to consider that it was what the life they were that they were looking for was going to be different than themselves.
And just imagine, you know, here we talk about the mind-body problem, you know, and trying to figure out what consciousness is. That's just here. What about the consciousness throughout the universe may not be the same consciousness?
Well, see, now that's the other thing that makes me think that UFOs have a lot to do with consciousness and survival, is because the people who have shared experiences about so-called abductions, they always say that the alien never spoke to them, but they knew what the alien was saying. So that speaks of telepathy, which we know is a communication that exists in a non-physical form. So,
yeah, and I think that if you believe in a God or a universal, you know, creator, I think that for quite a very period of time until we sort of got away from it, all communication took place, you know, that way.
It had to have.
That's the way that we were designed. Languages are just words that people came up with, you know, to be able,
Yeah, but look at it. You go to any place on the earth and you have a different language, a different form of communication. But telepathy is telepathy, and the mediums will tell you that. Even when they bring through somebody who lived in a different country and spoke a different language, they're still able to bring the message through.
And I mean, we don't have time to discuss it now, but I mean, a lot of people seem to draw a line in the sand, too. They either believe in intelligent design or they believe in evolution. And the two, as I see it, are not mutually exclusive. So, I mean, the way I see it, an intelligent designer set the pieces in place, you know, for evolution to occur. So, you know, I don't know why you can't believe in both.
You can. You just have to open your mind to it.
Right.
It boils down to.
So we're going to go to break. We have a guest calling in from Australia. As you mentioned, Alistair Conwell wrote two excellent books. So we'll be talking with him soon. Stay with us, and we'll be back in a few minutes.
Starseed Gems Studios in Cocoa, Florida fuses cremation ashes within art glass, making beautiful stones. The ashes are visible in the darkness and resemble a beautiful night sky. Starseed Gems, developed by the parents of a young man who passed away, are set in hand-sculpted silver and gold settings. Prices start at $150. Visit www.starseedgems.com or call 321-632-7770. That's www.starseedgems.com or 321-632-7770.
When grieving the loss of a loved one, sometimes a hug is just what you need. Hugs from Heaven are lightly weighted shoulder wraps that are made from the fabric of your loved one's clothing. Your clothing can also be made into memory pillows and sachets. Each Hugs from Heaven is handmade with loving care and is as unique as your loved one's spirit. Visit us at hugsfromheaven.com. That's hugs, spelled with a Z, from heaven.com. Who couldn't use a hug?
Learning to Dance in the Rain, a true story about life beyond death. When 21-year-old Maya dies in a tragic car crash, her parents begin to experience profound synchronicities, prophetic dreams, guidance from mediums, and the undeniable truth that death is not the end. Lori and Brian McDermott share their story, hoping to help others find strength and inspiration to face whatever storms life may bring. Learn more about this important book at www.learningtodanceintherain.net. That's www.learningtodanceintherain.net.
I would like to introduce you to the Forever Family Foundation, a nonprofit organization whose mission is to provide a forum where individuals and families who have suffered the loss of a loved one can turn for support, information, and hope. We believe in the continuity of the family, even though a member has left the physical world. The Forever Family Foundation is a joint effort of scientists, research mediums, and interested people who support the premise that life does not end with physical death. We wish to prove that the bond of the family cannot be broken even by death. We invite anyone who's trying to cope with the loss of a loved one to contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707. That's 631-425-7707. Or you can find us on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org. After-death communication is an accepted occurrence in many cultures throughout the world. But for many others, proof of this phenomenon is essential. And research shows that contact helps move people through loss and grief. The Sign Registry allows people to register signs that they, after passing, plan on communicating to specific loved ones. Contact the Forever Family Foundation at foreverfamilyfoundation.org or go directly to thesignregistry.com.
Welcome back to Signs of Life, brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation.
Tonight is Alastair Conwell. Our sponsor is Starseed Gems, and they can be found on the web at starseedgems.com. Bob?
And Alastair Conwell was born in India, and he grew up in Australia, where he is now. He has two psychology degrees. He's traveled widely. It was in Nepal where he first learned about the audible life stream, which is the subject of his first book. His articles on the audible life stream and meditation have been published internationally. He has now come out with a second book called Soul Comfort, Uplifting Insights into the Nature of Grief, Death, Consciousness, and Love for Transformation. And that's going to be the subject of our interview tonight. That book is also available as an e-book, as well as paperback. And it's been a while, as you mentioned off air, it's been about 5 years, so it's wonderful to have you back, Alastair.
Great, Bob. Yes, thank you. 5 years does seem like a long time, and thank you for having me on your show. And hello to you, Fran, as well.
Hello, hello.
Pleasure. So I mentioned your first book, which we had discussed a number of years ago, The Audible Life Stream, and that focused mainly about how one could prepare spiritually, you know, for death. And in your latest book, you're talking about grief, that the inevitable grief that one's going to experience following the death of a loved one. So two books around, the, you know, centering around death. So were you drawn to that subject? How'd that come about?
During my travels, I became very much interested in spirituality, and I did a lot of reading around different religions and did a lot of investigation into Buddhism, and Buddhism is a religion that deals a lot with death, and I think that's where my interest in death from a spiritual perspective really took off. I don't consider myself a Buddhist or aligned with any religion, but nevertheless, the spirituality around death is something that does interest me, because it's something we will all have to face at the end of our physical lives. And having written my first book, as you mentioned, about preparing spiritually for that inevitability of death, just led more more with an interest in the grief. So that is how the living, so before one's physical body actually comes to the end of its life, but how the living deal with death from the perspective of the other inevitable event in our lives, and that is grief when a loved one dies. So to me, there's a very strong spiritual link between preparing oneself for one's own physical death, but then also how to deal with the death of loved ones, again, from a deeply spiritual perspective. And that's where the second book really took off, the idea for the second book really took off from.
Yeah, and it is a wonderful book, you know, which I did read, and I think that a lot of people will get just what the title implies, soul comfort. And, you know, before we get into that, I want to make sure, I mentioned the first book, Audible Lifestream, and it's kind of a an interesting concept. So just can you briefly review, you know, what you meant by the Audible Lifestream? What exactly is it?
Sure. It's essentially a spiritual vibration. It's a conscious spiritual vibration. It's a vibration that really, and this is what I argue in the book in terms of providing evidence of the audible life stream, it's the underlying fabric of the universe. It's the basis of our own beings, but everything in the universe, both the spiritual and the spiritual aspects of the universe. It's basically the nature of one soul and the nature of our consciousness. And again, it has this vibratory, but also, interestingly enough, an audible aspect to it. And not audible in the physical sense whereby we hear the audible life stream with our physical ears, but we can tune into it and perceive that vibration through our spiritual sense faculties, because it's spiritual in nature. So, you know, it's essentially the quality of our soul, our spiritual soul.
So, by tuning into it, it's a way of catching a glimpse, sort of what is yet to come. You know, but as you mentioned, it's not any type of a vibratory noise, but it's more of a telepathic process or a sense of presence. I mean, how does one tap in? I mean, is it through meditation or through training? Or
yeah, that's exactly right. It's through meditation, a meditative process, because it's spiritual in nature. We really need to be able to tune into it in a meditative silence, a deep silence, because we need to just sort of block out all the external physical sounds and noises that we're usually surrounded by in our physical lives. So we need to find a quiet place to be able to just go within, listen with our soul, essentially. And that's why the subtitle to my first book is about, I use the term dying while living, because by being able to tune into the audible life stream in a meditative silence, we can, as you mentioned, get a glimpse of what we will encounter when the physical body actually dies, because we have access to that spiritual world through this audible spiritual vibration.
And so in Soul Comfort, I mean, you write, you know, that consciousness is a spiritual vibration. You know, I know you covered that in the first book. In Soul Comfort, you make reference to music of the spheres when you're discussing consciousness. So is that the music of the spheres, is that this audible life stream?
Yes, that's exactly right. And what really fascinated me, because I have an interest in music, in fact, but what fascinated me when I first learned about the audible life stream many years ago was it has musical qualities. And what's really interesting is, as you mentioned in Soul Comfort, I use the phrase the music of the spheres when I talk about the vibration, because you and many of your listeners will know that Pythagoras, the ancient Greek philosopher and mathematician who lived around 2,000 years ago, used this phrase, "music of the spheres." Now, that's interpreted in a quite a prosaic way about how if one attributes musical notes to the movement of the stars and planets, which Pythagoras was able to document mathematically, in a sense, the planets and their movements and motions can actually make a symphony. Now, that is, you know, mathematically true, but I think Pythagoras also used the phrase music of the spheres in a more mystical and esoteric sense, and in my view, he was alluding to the audible life stream because it is, as I mentioned, the fabric of the universe, and it has these musical qualities. So in a sense, it can be seen as the musical element of the spheres or our universe.
Mm. Well, it's interesting because people, when you listen to people that have had near-death experiences and read their accounts, a great many of them talk about hearing music. I mean, not hearing it with physical senses, you know, but wonderful, grand music, telepathically. There must be a connection.
Mm. Yeah. Exactly, and that to me is really what I found really fascinating and motivated me to write my first book, because when I was doing a lot of reading about near-death experiences, just out of interest, I picked up on that these people who had obviously no knowledge of the audible life stream and in some cases had no interest in spirituality or meditation, but nevertheless, or indeed perhaps in any mainstream religion, but nevertheless, as you mentioned, in their accounts, they were talking about this mysterious sound that they could feel, just that it had this amazing spiritual nature to it. And to me, with my knowledge of the audible life stream, it was clear to me that they were referring to the audible life stream. And as you'd be aware, in my first book, I relate many of those accounts to provide evidence of the audible life stream.
Yeah, and in the second book, in Soul Comfort, which gets very deeply into the nature of grief and why we grieve and concepts about consciousness and life and death, I mean, you clearly see that grief has the potential to transform. And a lot of people will look at that statement and say, what are you talking about? How can grief, you know, transform? Because it's just in, you know, this horrible, you know, deep sadness. So what potential, of grief to transform us?
Yeah, and you're right. I think most people would just see grief as a terribly sad event. And that's where I hope my second book can perhaps give them a new perspective on that. But because, yes, it is a very sad event. We're all going to experience it at some stage. But I think if we can look at grief from a spiritual perspective, it's in that process that I think the potential to transform lies. A number of other authors have used the term or described grief as a gift. And on the face of it, that might seem quite paradoxical because, as you've said, you know, it's a very sad event. But I think those other people were actually alluding to that transformative potential of grief. Because in my second book, I describe grief as a spiritual wound. Because I think, it really cuts so deeply through us beyond just the psychological, emotional turmoil. It's because of that connections we have with people, I think, not just at the physical level, at this physical level of consciousness, but at much higher levels and deeper levels of consciousness, which is what makes grief so unique. Because in a sense, that connection at the physical level is broken, but I see connections at the higher levels of consciousness remaining with our loved ones whose physical bodies have died. So I see grief as an opportunity in that spiritual context for people to take stock of their lives, to reflect on their values, their life goals, and perhaps you know, see it as an opportunity to perhaps deepen their sense of the spiritual. And in that, I see it as that potential to transform, because of that, it has the opportunity to deepen our spirituality.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, and so often, you know, the death of a physical death of someone is that trigger. You go through life on sort of cruise control, never thinking about spiritual or deeper issues, and now you're propelled into this world, and you're desperately searching for purpose and meaning and answers, and like that's what you're talking about. Yeah. You know, one thing about people that are bereaved, you hear this term closure. You know, I personally hate the term. You know, it implies that, you know, that there's an answer, so you could just, you know, forget about it and go on with your life. So, I mean, what are your thoughts about closure?
Yeah, good question, because yeah, it is a term that's widely used when talking about the death of a loved one and the grief that we experience. And I must admit, I tend to think it's overused, and I don't particularly like it either, because it implies that there's an end to the grieving process. We reach a point of closing it off, that closure. Whereas I think certainly from my experience and the experiences of those that are close to me, I don't see that there's ever really a point where one closes the door on grief. Yes, over time, our grief for a loved one can change. You know, we can perhaps manage that grief more easily over time. But I don't think it ever ends. And so, like you, I struggle with that concept of a sense of closure. Because to me, grieving never really ends. It just changes over time, perhaps, but never really ends.
Yeah, and you make the point that, you know, we grieve because we love. So, you know, the deeper our love, you know, the deeper our grief. But you also write, you know, all comfort, you know, that love is the face of the soul. And you bring together the concepts of consciousness and love. So, I mean, is there like a symbiotic relationship between consciousness and love?
Yeah, certainly I see it, and that's what I've tried to convey in my second book, because I see love as a natural expression of consciousness, because the nature of consciousness is to be unified. You know, at the highest level, at the soul level, we are all unified. And we're all connected to that soul right now in this very moment, although our level of awareness is at the physical realm. And so we don't have that awareness of our soul consciousness. But to me, love and consciousness are both, by their very natures, unifying forces. And so to varying degrees, we all seek love, and we seek to be loved because we are conscious beings. So in my second book, I sort of describe consciousness as having the same properties of water, because water's a very unique material in that it has both cohesive and adhesive properties. So water seamlessly bonds cohesively together in small droplets, in pools, ponds, lakes, and even vast oceans. And water also adheres to different molecules like glass, which is why when you pour water into a test tube, you get the meniscus on the surface of the water. It's because it's adhering to the glass, and that adhering force is stronger than the cohesive forces of the water molecules. So water is quite unique, and I see consciousness in the same way, in that it can be attracted to the same or different types of other consciousnesses, if there's such a word as consciousnesses. And so that's where I see the relationship between love and consciousness, is that they are both unifying forces. And so, as I mentioned earlier, you know, the different levels of consciousness that we function on are tied at the different levels. So you know, two people can be drawn together at a conscious level in the physical realm, but at higher levels of consciousness, those bonds also exist at higher levels of consciousness, because the unifying nature of consciousness operates at all levels. So that's where I see the relationship between love and consciousness.
Mm. And you also point out that when one physically dies, you know, that when you shed the physical body, that actually distills, refines consciousness, because the physical senses are no more, this pure consciousness doesn't die. That's why I think you have all these reports of people that relate clear thinking, at times when their bodies are not functioning at all. You know, sometimes no brain activity and the heart stops, and when we're talking about some of these near-death experiences, and yet what do they describe? You know, the acute senses and seeing loved ones and clear thinking. You know, hard to explain in physical terms, right?
Exactly, and to me that's abundantly clear that some form of a person's identity remains after the physical body dies or is no longer functioning. And if there's some form of identity, to me that means that their memories, a person's memories, their relationships with people who are in the physical realm or who have crossed over into the spiritual realm still exist. And as you mentioned, they some people who have near-death experiences talk about seeing dead relatives, for example. Now, without any form of personal identity being able to survive the death of the physical body, those memories of loved ones, whether dead or alive, wouldn't exist. And so that's why I talk about when the physical body dies, that the ego consciousness that operates at the physical realm is distilled into a more refined ego consciousness to enable the personality of someone to continue to exist. So it's not exactly the same ego consciousness that we operate on at the physical level. It's a more refined or purified ego consciousness. And as we go through the high levels of consciousness, there's more refining of that ego consciousness until we reach that soul consciousness, which is the highest, in my view, form of consciousness.
Mm. And what you described is why evidential, mediums are able to bring through personalities, because we don't just disperse into the universe. We actually retain, a certain degree, of memories from when we were in a physical incarnation. We are talking with Alistair Conwell. His latest book is called Soul Comfort, Uplifting Insights into the Nature of Grief, Death, Consciousness, and Love for Transformation. We will be going to a break. We come back, we have lots more to talk about. Stay with us, and we'll be back in a few minutes.
Starseed Gems Studios in Cocoa, Florida fuses cremation ashes within art glass, making beautiful stones. The ashes are visible in the darkness and resemble a beautiful night sky. Starseed Gems, developed by the parents of a young man who passed away, are set in hand-sculpted silver and gold settings. Prices start at $150. Visit www.starseedgems.com or call 321-632-7770. That's www.starseedgems.com or 321-632-7770.
The American Association of Electronic Voice Phenomena has always been international and concerned with more than just EVP. To better serve the public, the AAEVP is now Association Transcommunication, or ATRANS-C. Their new website is atranc.org, and their motto is Objective Evidence of Survival. The directors believe people should know that death is not dying, and what we learn now applies to what we will learn hereafter.
Does consciousness survive death? Can technology be used to interact with the deceased? Can hearing from the dead heal the living? At the Windbridge Institute, we are working to answer these and similar questions. Through our studies with certified research mediums, we are examining psychic abilities and communication with the other side, offering insights into the limitless nature of consciousness and unlocking the possibilities of our bodies, minds, and spirits. Be a part of it. Become a Windbridge member today. Please visit www.windbridge.org to learn more.
I would like to introduce you to the Forever Family Foundation, a nonprofit organization whose mission is to provide support for families who have suffered the loss of a loved one. We believe in the continuity of the family, even though a member has left the physical world. We invite anyone who's trying to cope with the loss of a loved one to contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707 or on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org. For years, people have been reporting communication from those no longer in our physical world. Historically, science and religion have taught us to ignore such messages. Yet, there is now substantial scientific evidence to the contrary. In response to this, the Forever Family Foundation has developed a sign registry to demonstrate the existence of this other dimension. On our website, people can register signs that they, after passing, plan on communicating to a specific loved one. Upon the registrant's passing, the stored information can be verified by the recipient of these signs. Participants will be taking part not only in a grand scientific experiment, but in providing the greatest gift of all, the knowledge that we survive our physical death. For more information, contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707, or you can find us on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org. Or to register a sign, go directly to thesignregistry.com.
Welcome back to Signs of Life, brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation.
If you're just tuning in, our guest tonight is Alistair Conwell. Our sponsor is Starseed Gems, and they can be found on the web at starseedgems.com. When you're shopping on the internet, even for a smallest item, please keep Forever Family Foundation in mind. By doing this one simple task when you shop, you can financially support the work of Forever Family Foundation, a 100% volunteer not-for-profit organization without sending us any money at all. Since many of us shop on Amazon.com, using any of the Amazon links or book links on the Forever Family Foundation website to take you to the Amazon site is the only step you need to take before you start shopping. This will result in a donation from Amazon to us based on a dollar percentage of everything that goes into your shopping cart. And what if you don't shop on Amazon? That's not a problem. There's another way to be certain that almost all your website shopping produces a donation to Forever Family Foundation without you having to send us anything at all. Visit iGive.com. Sign up and name Forever Family Foundation as the charity of your choice. Go ahead, it's free. And just like with Amazon, a portion of your spending results in a donation to Forever Family Foundation. Once you set it up, each time you shop on the internet, iGive.com will automatically send us a donation when you shop in one of their more than 1,600 online stores that you're probably already shopping in, like 1-800-Flowers or Drugstore.com. How about Home Depot and Petco, Vera Bradley? So please take a few moments when you shop to show us that you care. Our Holidays Pass 2015 raffle is quickly approaching with the drawing set for December 23rd. The five winners will each receive a one-hour medium reading with one of Forever Family Foundation's certified mediums, Tracy Lee Nash, Dr. Neil Zapowski, Nancy Marlowe, Dustin Livers, or Kathy Towle. Winners are chosen from a computer program that selects five numbers randomly from a pool of consecutive numbers that are assigned to each entry. So enter, enter often, and have lots of different numbers. Miami, Florida's November 13th event, Visitations and Validations, an evening of spirit communication with Joanne Gerber at Hampton Inn and Suites, Miami Airport South, at 7 p.m. is tomorrow. Advance registration ends at midnight tonight, and admission at the door is available only if empty seats remain. We have two annual Holidays Past events scheduled this year. Joanne Gerber in Natick, Massachusetts, and Joe Scheel and Janet Nohavik team up in Pompton Lakes, New Jersey. Both events are on December 12th. The last event for this year is set for Friday, December 18th in Oceanside, New York, with medium Angelina Diana and just 12 lucky guests. Some seats remain available. Check out our upcoming webinars and any additional events on our website at www.foreverfamilyfoundation.org. And if you are a business interested in advertising on our show, please contact us via email at radio@foreverfamilyfoundation.org or call the office at 631-425-7707. Back to you, Bob.
And we're back with Alistair Conwell. We're talking about his latest book, Soul Comfort. Alistair, I know in your first book you wrote a little bit about, you know, the nature of time and the physical world. You know, we see time as linear, and you write that that's an illusion, which I certainly understand. But you also say that that illusion is related to the concept of karma. So can you explain that connection? How might the illusion of time be related to karma?
Sure. And that's a really good question, because many years ago that connection came to me when I was riding my bush bike one weekend. And I realized that this concept of karma, and most of your listeners I'm sure would be aware of what that is, that's basically the concept of cause and effect. But of course, the concept of karma or cause and effect is inherently related to a linear form of time, because a cause happens at point A on the timeline, and therefore at point B further on along that timeline, a cause happens. And so when you have linear time, therefore it sustains the concept of karma or cause and effect. And to me, that's really significant, because if one shows, and certainly quantum physicists have shown, that this concept of linear time is an illusion, because it's really about how, and in my first book I actually explain in more detail how I see the way the brain works as supporting or sustaining this illusion of linear time, because if you know, we didn't have this illusion of linear time, we'd just be in a chaotic world. Everything would be happening at once. And of course, we can't function in a world like that. And so if one can accept that this concept of linear time, this sort of past, this present, this future, is an illusion, then ultimately it suggests that this concept of karma is an illusion as well, because karma, as I've said, requires the concept of linear time. And that, to me, shows how if one can raise one's levels of consciousness and go above this illusion of linear time, we can, in effect, go above the illusion of karma as well, because karma ultimately is illusory too, because of its inherent link to the illusory concept of linear time.
So, many channeled, you know, reports suggest that, you know, the way that we live our physical lives affect our life after physical death. I guess that would be a form of karma. And the way that you lived your life in the physical world, where there is linear time, actually could affect your existence in a realm of existence where there is no time. So isn't it possible then that karma does pierce the veil and go throughout the various spheres of existence?
Yeah, absolutely, because as you rightly say, in this physical world, we live in a linear time reality with three other dimensions, length, breadth, and height. So we can't ignore that. But ultimately, this linear time world is not the ultimate reality. It's our reality where we are now. And in other even higher forms of reality, there is linear worlds as well, worlds where linear time operates in a slightly different way, which is why many people who have near-death accounts talk about the distortion of time. So it's still linear, but it's slightly distorted. And that's because their consciousness is being more purified at the higher levels. Mm. So yes, karma operates in this world. It also operates in higher realms of consciousness because linear time still operates there. But at the soul level, for example, and I argue the soul level of consciousness is the highest level of consciousness, linear time, karma, does not exist because the soul is above the illusion of, or soul consciousness is above the illusion of karma, the illusion of time, and therefore beyond the scope of life, death, etc.
So when we talk about our spiritual development and that how that will affect us, you know, on these higher levels of consciousness, by spiritual development, are we talking about compassion, love? Are those the components of spiritual development?
Absolutely key in my view. And because those concepts of love, compassion are all about, are really underpinned by the notion of a unified consciousness. Because when we love someone, we are connecting with them, at a physical, at a spiritual, psychological level. So it's a unifying concept. Compassion, empathy, all those things, again, are unifying concepts because we are connecting with people. And so, you know, spiritual development for me is about expanding one's consciousness beyond just the individual ego I consciousness that we all, operate on in our physical bodies. It's about expanding that to other beings, other sentient beings, and expanding our levels of consciousness to higher realms, or higher levels of consciousness. And in doing so, we just automatically connect with other beings on a empathetic, compassionate, spiritual level. So I think, in a nutshell, that you're exactly right. It's about compassion and love and empathy and all those unifying concepts.
And what you suggest in the book, and I think rightly so, is that, you know, as our consciousness, you know, rises, along with that, our pain diminishes. So I guess, you know, more spiritual love equals less pain. I mean, is that what you found?
Yeah, absolutely. And again, it's about, you know, when we connect with other beings, other sentient beings, our awareness shifts from just the I, the self. And to me, that's a critical shift in our perceptions. If we can relate to other beings in a compassionate, empathetic way, we are shifting our focus from just ourselves to others. We are expanding our levels of consciousness beyond that individual I-self. Mm. And that is just a natural process of spiritual development, about taking a broader universal view.
It makes sense because, even in things like when researchers study intention and telepathy and PK, I mean, it seems that emotions, specifically the bond of love, seems to enhance the, like, you know, psychic interactions, you know. And then also when there's a bond of love, it seems like it's an actual, you know, conduit between those in the spirit world and those in the physical world. So there could be as crazy as it sounds, there could be some physical explanation to that spiritual bond of love.
Yeah, absolutely. And to me, it makes perfect sense because it's all about expanding one's level of consciousness to higher realms. And therefore, one's perception changes, you know, changes to a much more spiritual, expansive, universal mindset, as opposed to just an ego-based mindset where you see literally the world and everyone around you from purely one point of view. But when one is able to expand one's levels of consciousness, suddenly a whole range of other viewpoints come on the horizon, as it were. And so you can see things from different perspectives. It's a bit like you can get the perspective of the world or city from the base of a mountain or the hill. But if you climb that hill and then look at the city from the top of that hill, your perspective is completely different. You know, but you're looking at the same city, but your perspective is different. And to me, that's a lot like spiritual development. It's about changing one's perception to see things, the same things, but from a completely different, higher level perspective.
Right. From the higher level, you see the formation of how things work.
Exactly.
You wrote something that I thought was very interesting. You wrote that ultimately, the purpose and meaning of life and the purpose and meaning of death are the same, and that is to deepen your sense of the spiritual. You remember writing that?
I do.
Okay. I thought that was wonderful because people never look at, you know, is that, you know, the meaning of death and meaning of life the same, but when you have a different perspective, perhaps they are.
Yeah, that's exactly how I see it, because for me, you know, we are inherently spiritual beings. We happen at this time in our physical bodies, having a physical journey, but it's only the physical aspect to a much larger, broader journey of the consciousness that we currently have within these physical bodies, because there's a spiritual aspect to that journey. And to me, that spiritual aspect is the more important aspect to that journey because of our inherent spiritual nature. Mm. So for me, a physical life has a spiritual purpose. And, you know, even when we lose these physical bodies, that spiritual purpose doesn't change. It deepens because we have then awareness of the spiritual realm. And right now, even though for many of us we aren't fully aware of that, may not be fully aware of that spiritual purpose because of the physical aspect and nature of the journey we're on, but nevertheless, because of our inherent spirituality, there's an underlying spiritual journey. And I think it's important at some point in someone's life to become aware of that spiritual journey. And grief is an opportunity to do that.
Yeah, and I think that's a perfect, that's very well said, and it's a perfect place to end. And I want to tell everybody that we've been talking with Alistair Conwell, that's C-O-N-W-E-L-L. The book is called Soul Comfort, Uplifting Insights into the Nature of Grief, Death, Consciousness, and Love for Transformation. You know, a lot of people always ask, you know, when they're bereaved or they know somebody that's bereaved, you know, what kind of book can they send them? And I'd recommend this book. It's easy to read. There are a lot of deep things but in the book, but that one can easily grasp, and it does ultimately do what it says, provide soul comfort. So, Alistair, it's been a pleasure to speak with you again. I hope you'll come back soon, and I want to thank you very much.
Thank you, Bob, and thank you, Fran. I really appreciate your time, and thank you for having me on your show.
Take care.
We now ask our listeners to please join us in our Healing Energy Circle prayer. May the universe create a channel of healing energy from all participating listeners, sending that energy to those who are in need of recovery of the physical body, spirit, and mind, as we visualize the healing light upon Joe Nadal, Karen Gould, Lisa, Carol Wessick, Kane Malloy, Donald Peterson, Pat Drance, Ala, Johnny Boo, Judy Pernick, Donna Mello, David Mello, Matt Mello, Kimberly Savager, Rachel Skandarian, Marianne Pierschka, Julie Beischel, Ann Hutchinson, David Haith, Rita Springer, Vicki Steffi, Jean Lash, Tracy Lee Nash, Erica, Betty Kovach, Joanne Gerber, Eddie Roll, Tom Donahue, Tim Donahue, Andrea, Richard, Brian, Karen, Henry Stark, Johnny Jackson, Andy O'Brien, Stanley Mullen, Glenna Irwin, Lynn Austin, Michael Tim, Patty Potter, Eileen Lafada, Wendy Lippo, Doug Berry, Philip McPhee, and Denise. Now let us.
And Mark Bacuzzi could use some healing.
And Mark Bacuzzi. Let's send some also to Mark Bacuzzi. And now let us, as one consciousness, give our energy of loving thought by praying like this: to love one another, to treat others as we would like to be treated, to forgive others and return love for hate, kindness for anger, to spread this feeling to everyone, to our fellow man, as well as the earth and its environment. And now it's time for us to say,
our loved ones are only a heartbeat away,
and science is going to prove it.
Good night, everyone.